Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast, boys and girls, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I am coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. On today's edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast, I'll be joined by The Ringer's Jonathan Sharks, the excellent NBA writer for TheRinger.com. So we talk, you're not going to believe this, folks, all things NBA. We hit on a multitude of things within the NBA. So, for instance, like what he's been watching, why the Grizzlies have been so much fun to watch, and why they're for real down the stretch here. Which story has him most intrigued across the NBA? How J.B. Bickerstaff has figured it out in Cleveland? Why Evan Mobley can be the best player on a contender? The top three picks in the 2021 draft check-in, Jalen, Cade, and Mobley. Then we put Jonathan in Travis Schlink's shoes. And how does he fix Atlanta if he were in charge of the Hawks? What did the Hawks do? Why Ben Simmons might not be the cleanest fit? What to make of the Hawks? What they can do going forward? Frank Vogel's coaching job in LA this season and what happens there? And then, of course, De'Aaron Fox and what makes him so interesting for Sacramento and what the Kings should ultimately decide to do with him and Haliburton and that fit. As the trade deadline approaches with Hield and Barnes being out there, but De'Aaron Fox, what happens there? All that and more on today's edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast with The Ringer's Jonathan Sharks. Before we get started with today's program, though, I would like to mention how you can support this very program. It starts with leaving a quick 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, if that is your preferred app of choice for listening to this very podcast. Go visit ChaseThomasPodcast.com for access to all of my previous episodes, and make sure to subscribe to the Sports Renaissance Man newsletter. It's me, SportsRenaissanceMan.substack.com. Again, SportsRenaissanceMan.substack.com. Type in your email, that easy. Do it today. As always, you can email this very program any questions, comments, mailbag stuff for any of the main guests on the weekly program, chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. again, that is chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. and follow me on Twitter at @chase_thomas, and like the Facebook page at facebook.com/chasethomaswriter. All right, Uncle Darren, let's ride.
Chase Thomas Podcast, the Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I am joined now by The Ringer's Jonathan Sharks. Jonathan, how are you, sir?
I'm good. You know, your newsletter is called the Sports Renaissance Man. It's true. Like, you know, when I see your podcast, you're always talking about every sport. It's kind of incredible. I don't know how you keep track of everything.
Thanks, man. No, I didn't come up with the Sports Renaissance name myself. Another writer, I think he's at the Action Network now, did this like 15 podcast that you should go check out and subscribe to. And your boss was right above me. on this list on Medium. And he referred to me as a sports renaissance man. And I just was like, hey, there's something I could run with that. I hadn't thought about that. But like you said, I do like to keep up with just about everything. But I think that's one of the fundamental differences with me versus a lot of, I think, sports writers now is just most of your colleagues, they specialize in one particular sport, yourself included. And there's not many folks who dive in and want to be as aware and just knowledgeable about everything. But I like knowing a little bit about a lot rather than knowing everything about one particular thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's nice to talk to a throwback.
I didn't consider myself a throwback. I guess I really am. There's not a lot of like shows like this, I guess. I guess this is kind of a different thing. But it's also kind of unnerving when I do like a basketball podcast like this with you, because it's just there's, you know what the quality is, and you know where other people can go with different NBA pods and like the Ringer NBA show, Dunked On, all kinds of stuff. There's all kinds of great stuff all across the internet. So it's you're like, should I even attempt to dip my toes into all these different waters when there is elite level hyper focused coverage across the board too?
I mean, why not, right? Life is short. Do what makes you happy. That's my philosophy.
Yeah, I mean that really is like, do the show that you want to do and write about the stuff you want to write about. And I imagine that's just how you are with basketball. You're like, that's what I like doing, and I like writing about scripture, and I like writing about the books that I read. You just you kind of follow the same ethos, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you are interested in it, then your audience certainly won't be, right?
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably true. Well, don't forget, folks, you can find Jonathan and all his great work at theringer.com. So go subscribe or go check out ringer.com today if you have not already done so. Go follow him on Twitter at Jonathan Charks. And yeah, read all of his great NBA content along with all the other good folks at theringer.com. And don't forget that Sports Renaissance Man newsletter that he's talking about. Yeah, you can subscribe. SportsRenaissanceMan.substack.com. Charks, I want to start with this week in basketball. Who have you found yourself watching the most outside of the Mavericks, of course?
I mean, I think the Grizzlies for sure. Hmm. I wouldn't even say it's this week. They've been maybe the big story in the NBA in the regular season. I think a lot of times in the NBA, you know, you can talk about KD or LeBron, but those guys are ultimately defined by the playoffs, right? And you've been in the league a certain amount of times. What those guys do, or Steph even, in the regular season, doesn't really necessarily mean all that much in the big picture. Whereas like a young up-and-coming team like the Grizzlies, that's what's exciting with the regular season, is watching those teams make the leap. They've been killing it all year. They've been killing it more in the last week or so.
The Grizzlies are fascinating, and I didn't put them on our rundown, but like the one thing that I just struggle with, and Ben Golliver does this with the Bulls a little bit on the GOAT podcast, another great NBA show, but it's something that I think about with them, where people are talking themselves into, oh, well, they're ahead of schedule, so they should be able, like, we have to talk about whether or not they're contenders. And then it's like, well, no, the Suns and the Warriors, and just, like, they're not there, right? Like, do you see a path where, with the way the roster's currently constructed, and where you see the trajectory for a lot of their important pieces, like, there's a path for them to actually contend for a title with multiple guys who are top 15 NBA players? Because as of right now, it's still just one, and it seems pretty unlikely that this group could get to that point, right?
I will say this. If last year was proof of anything, it you never really know, right? Mm. No one thought there was a path to the Suns, and then Anthony Davis went down in the first round. I think, what would they play? Kawhi went down in the second or third round. Everything just kind of, oh, then Jamal Murray went down. Like, everything lined up for them. So you just never really know, right? Like, it's very easy to war game out at the start of the season. Oh, there's Giannis, there's LeBron, there's KD, there's the Suns. But these things can always be flexible. I mean, I think if I'm Memphis, am I thinking about a title? No. Like, they got to win a first-round series first. First things first. And then we'll see where you go from there.
If they got matched up with the Mavs, would you like the Mavs matchup there? Or do you think they would clean up against Dallas?
Dallas has been a very, very tough team to figure out because they have a new coach. And then their best three players have played like Luka, Porzingis, and Brunson have played like 15 games together. And it definitely kind of feels like Dallas they were kind of talk the league 2 years ago when Memphis is now, and now they're kind of yesterday's news. But I mean, I think if you have Luka Doncic, you always have a chance in the playoff series.
Absolutely. Is there one story in particular that has you the most intrigued at the moment?
Beyond the Grizzlies, I guess the other team I love this year is the Hornets. Same kind of thing. I love watching young teams on the rise. I kind of had them pegged as this year's Hawks for the season. I think that's kind of played out. They're so much fun to watch. I'd say they're even more fun to watch than Memphis. Maybe not quite as good, but more fun to watch.
Is there anything in particular about their play style that stands out to you?
Yeah, I mean, LaMelo and Bridges. Those guys, they're just running and gunning, man. They're great. Like, there's just two young guys, and they're playing at full speed all the time. I love both those guys. They move the ball a lot. I think, like, Memphis to me, you compare them, I got Memphis, Charlotte, you compare them to Boston, where Boston has two young guys who both want to shoot every time. And it's like, that can work, sure, but I also find that as fun as a guy like LaMelo who moves the ball and makes everyone, it's just more fun to play with, more fun to watch, in my opinion.
Has LaMelo been better than what you expected him coming out of college or coming out of Australia?
Yes, as a scorer. Because I think we all knew he was an elite point guard, crazy handles, crazy passing. The question was, could he score well enough to be a primary option, especially as a jump shooter? He's been a better shooter than we think. He's shooting like 90% from the free throw line this season, which is incredible. So I think he's been better in his weaker areas. I expected his strengths to be his strengths, but really he has fewer weeks than I thought he would have.
What if the Warriors had taken him? Do you think about that at all?
Of course. I mean, that's like just hanging out there. Like,
yeah,
it'd been so much fun because he actually does fit with how they play too. It's a great sport. It would have been so much fun to watch. It feels like that was the move. Golden State actually could have been a dynasty for the next 10 years, but I think when Melo's happier, it went out this way, though. I think he's happier to have his own team.
Yeah, that's true. But it's a great what if, especially if, like you said, this does not keep going year over year. And but it's hard to thread that needle. The Hornets are just in a weird spot, though, because I think the Hawks, you mentioned that they were this year's Hawks, but you don't think LaMelo has the same upside as Trey at this point. Do you think he can get to what Trey is now in terms of on-court value?
Yes, it's different, though. He's so much taller.
Yeah.
He doesn't shoot as much as Trey. But I think in a lot of ways, it makes it easier to build around him because he's more, I mean, Trey's a great passer too, but Trey gets his shots up. Like, you know, it is kind of is what it is. And LaMelo is 6'8", so you can't target him on defense. So I think I'd actually take him above Trey, I think. Personally.
Oh, wow.
But I'm always going to lean more towards a taller player. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, I don't know. The Hawks defense is just a mess in of itself. But our guy that you and I have texted about, Onyeka Okongwu, he's coming. And the return of Okongwu and just what he did with Giannis last night. Very excited to see what he does going forward. But I don't think he alone can fix the Hawks defense and where their season's going. I think I saw today, like, Basketball Reference gives the Hawks like a 3% chance if you do that little calculator on the website, of making the playoffs still, which is just preposterous. Like,
making
that
the play-ins or making the playoffs?
The playoffs, just as a whole.
So that would mean, because, like, it's weird now with the play-ins. Mm-hmm. Like, are they saying they have a 3% chance of making the play-ins, or that if they made the play-ins, they'd only have a 3% chance of actually getting the playoffs?
I think it's just like when you keep playing it out, they have like a 3% chance of making the play-in and then making the playoffs.
I'd probably give them a higher chance than that. I do think, you know, in a one game win or go home scenario, they probably, I mean, I still believe in their talent. I think they can punch above their weight, but we'll see, obviously.
I mean, there's going to be some interesting trade deadline stuff with them. I don't know. Sure. Nothing would surprise me with Atlanta at this point. Not a thing that they do at the deadline would surprise me. We're going to take a quick break for a message from our sponsors, but we will be right back. All right, we're back here with Jonathan Charks of TheRinger.com to talk all things NBA. Jonathan, the biggest story, I think, outside of the Grizzlies right now is the Cleveland Cavaliers. What, in your estimation, has J.B. Bickerstaff figured out in Cleveland this year?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing is they got really lucky in the draft. Mm-hmm. I thought Evan Mobley was the best player in this draft, and they got him at 3. And he's been even better than I thought he would be. He's been incredible. I think number one is that. Number two, where you have to give Bickerstaff a ton of credit if you went with these supersized lineups. Because like on paper, it's like, okay, we're going to start Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, and Lauri Markkanen, 3 7-footers. That's just not done in the NBA anymore. And no one really thought that would work. But Bickerstaff said, hey, forget their heights, look at their skill sets. Actually, Markkanen's a shooter. It almost doesn't matter. He's 7 feet tall because he'll shoot threes anyway, so it's irrelevant. And then Mobley can cover for him on defense. And Mobley's a good enough passer at the four that even though him and Jared Allen give you great spacing, they can still make it work. So I think he did a fantastic job of looking beyond the kind of like 30,000 foot, these guys are all 7-footers. He looked past that, saw their skill sets, saw the best way they could all complement each other. And he went with it. He really defied a lot of the conventional wisdom about the NBA in 2022. And he's reaping the rewards for it.
How much of it do you think is just the subtraction of Colin Sexton?
Well, I wasn't going to say that. That's just mean.
But it's not even mean. It's like we don't have anything against Colin Sexton, the person. It's just that like that's the elephant in the room that I think about a lot with this group. And when you watch them, you're like, I think that's just him just being out is a net positive. It's kind of like Cam in Atlanta where it's like it just was never going to work figuring him out with this group and him just not being around, I think, is a net positive for the team. Unfortunately,
I mean, I think the logic of it makes sense, right? Okay, you've got an undersized guard, not really a passer, doesn't play a ton of defense, used a ton of possessions, scores a lot, but he's not passing the ball, so it's hard for anybody else to get in the flow of the offense. And then you replaced him with Rubio for a long time. I guess now Rondo, like he's been out lately. So yeah, like Colin Sexton to me always profiled as a sixth man who was made into the lead guard. And now without him there, you're seeing Darius Garland take a big step forward. I think that's the big thing. It's like Sexton not being there has allowed it to become Darius Garland's team. He's been great. He's just an actual point guard. Sexton is not. And giving him the ball has allowed everybody else. Yeah, so I just think having him gone, it allowed Darius Garland to take a big step forward. He's just more of a point guard than Sexton. He's way more of a distributor. And having removing Sexton from that mix is allowed to take a step forward. He's been great this season.
Yeah, what is it about Garland now? Like, what have you seen? Like, what is he doing differently that puts him on the all-star status? Because he was always able to shoot, and I love his three-point moonball. But, like, what is it about his game that he is polished to the point where he's on another level? What in-game action is he doing that you're like, okay, he's figured this out?
Well, it's funny you ask that, because I think I was talking the other day about the most improved player. And I think most players, they'll say, I didn't actually get better. I was just given a better opportunity. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think he would say, I was the same player I was, but now I'm the lead guard instead of being the secondary guy. I mean, that's the biggest thing. Like, not only is he now the lead guard in Cleveland, which he wasn't before, now he's passing to much better players. He's playing with Evan Mobley. Having more, Jared Allen's a year better. They have more chemistry now, him and Jared Allen, after trading four at the deadline. And the number I look at, a lot of guards, really with a lot of players, I think it's 2-point percentage. Because these days, people take so many threes, field goal percentage is kind of a misleading statistic, right? Because not even Steph is going to shoot as well from three as he does from two, right? So you kind of have to separate out, and Garland's a ton of threes. So his improvement is a little hidden. You'll get his field goal percentage, but I'm looking at his 2-point percentage. He's shooting 54% of two. That's a massive jump forward. And that's the big thing. He's just much more efficient this year. He just finishes better. Getting to his spots, he's more comfortable. I think that's probably a big part of it as well.
Huh. Do you think it's, so what is the trajectory? When you look at the point guard groupings and the young guards and lead guards on great teams, like, can he get to where Ja is right now? Can he be what Kyrie was years ago? Like, where do you see him at in like the terms of just ranking best guy, like lead ball handlers?
It's interesting. I don't know. I've always liked Garland, but I never really saw him in that Trae Young, John Morant class. And for as well as he's playing now, I probably wouldn't put him in that category. I don't think he's dynamic enough on offense. He's obviously pretty small. He's always been limited defensively. I think if you're Cleveland, what you're really thinking is he doesn't have to be that guy because you've got Evan Mobley. we've got our franchise seven footer, and Garland's going to play off him the rest of his career. That is really exciting for Cleveland.
So do you think this is sustainable, that like if you had to be clairvoyant Jonathan Charks for a second, like do you see Cleveland being in the top four in the East come playoff time?
I don't know about top four. The East is pretty loaded at the top. I think the definite playoff team. I think they can probably stay in that top six is the goal for them this year. Because you got, like, I guess Brooklyn KD's out again, but you got Miami, you got Milwaukee, Chicago, isn't good. I think top four is probably a little ambitious, but I think the goal is stay in the top six.
Do you like the long-term fit of Allen and Mobley?
I mean, I was very skeptical of it, but now I'm kind of at the point where I think Evan Mobley's so good, it almost doesn't matter. Like, he can fit anywhere, basically. I think he's going to be one of the best players in the NBA in a few years.
Wow. So what do you think is the biggest skill that you're most excited about makes Mobley different? Like, what about him, just you, when you were in the pre-draft process, that you were like, this is why I think he's probably the number one overall pick over Jalen Green and Cade Cunningham?
I think the thing with Mobley that I really, really was interested in last year is I'm a big believer in 7 foot guards. When you have a 7 footer who can handle the ball, pass the ball, and move like a guard, to me, that's the player I want to build my team around. You know, not that he's these kind of players, but it's this mold of Anthony Davis, Giannis, Kevin Durant. I think if I have a 7 foot guard, I like my chances. And then with Mobley, to me, I just thought the physical tools, his ability to see the game at a really high level, and his overall skill level, to me said this guy would be number one to me in most drafts, not just last year. And the number with Mobley I thought was most interesting. So he was the Pac-12 player of the year, the Pac-12 freshman of the year, and the Pac-12 defensive player of the year. There's only been one other player who's in one of the top five conferences who's hit all three boxes. You want to guess who that player was?
I don't know. Who is it?
Anthony Davis.
Oh, man. Okay. So pretty high. Does he have Anthony Davis' ceiling? Do you think he'd be better than the best we've seen of Davis?
I think different. I don't think he's as good a scorer as AD was, but he's a much better passer. He's kind of more like a Jokic mixed with the Davis. He's got some Draymond Green in his game, some Bam Adebayo. It's just tough. We're talking about 7 foot guards. There's not a lot of comparisons for them. Because this is a new kind of player. That's only in the last 15 or so years we've even seen 7 foot guards. So each one of them is different in his own way. But I think he has a chance to be that caliber of player, if not quite Anthony Davis. He's a different kind.
Were you at all nervous when Rubio went down that was it because of how well he was playing?
A little. I mean, he was great. He was phenomenal from this year. And it's been really impressive how they've kept rolling without him.
And the Rondo stuff, it's like, yeah, we'll see what happens. But I don't think you can replace what they lost in Rubio. Do any of the top three picks from the 2021 NBA draft profile as the best player on a team that wins a title? It sounds like you've got Mobley on that list. Do you think Cade or Jalen still have that upside?
I wasn't as high on either of them as most people. I think they're probably the second best player on a title team. I think Mobley, to me, is the one that could be the best player.
What worries you about Jalen Green the most in Houston that you've seen? What worries you most about his long-term star trajectory?
Well, I think the main thing with Jalen Green is, okay, you can score the ball, but can you do anything else? Are you a passer? Are you a good defender? I think it's just really hard to be the best player on an elite team and all you can do is score. I've not seen a ton of playmaking ability. To me, I'd put him more in the kind of category of a Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, Zach LaVine type, which is a very, very good player. I think he's very talented. But I'm not sure that player can be the best player on an elite team.
Do you think he's been coached well this year?
I think it's been a tough situation. I think the coach was put in a tough spot. There's a lot of young guys. I think it's very difficult to develop two guards simultaneously. We saw that in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And Sexton went down, Garland kind of rose up. And you've got Kevin Porter there and Jalen Green. And I think young guards, they're just trying to figure out who they are in the NBA. They really can't worry about, like, how do they fit into a team? How do they make a team better? How do they make their teammates better? Because they're still trying to figure out how do they make themselves better. And it's just hard to have two of those guys on the same team at the same time.
Put yourself in Travis Schlink's shoes down here in Atlanta. How do you fix them at the ahead of the deadline?
Oof, man. I wouldn't panic, just as I wouldn't have panicked last year. I think I would count on DeAndre Hunter getting back. He really has been the same player since he hurt. I expect him to be a lot better going forward. Capella, I don't know. He's up and down this year. John Collins has been good. Herter's been kind of the same. I mean, I would love Ben Simmons. I think if you could get Trae Young and Ben Simmons to get on the same page, I would love that. I don't know if they have the piece that the Philly's going to want to acquire Ben Simmons. If there was a way to build a trade, I would use all – if you're going to make a big trade, I would try to get Ben Simmons. I think he'd be a great fit for Trae Young. I think he could be the Draymond Green to Trae's death, in a sense.
The thing about Draymond, and I think about that too, and I'm just like on the floor, people overthink it of like Trae off the ball. And it's like, I don't think Trae's the type of player that would be all that hurt offensively playing off the ball. I think he'd be okay. I don't think his shooting is quite still what people think it is. I think he's still a career 34% three-point shooter, but a lot of those looks would be improved playing next to Ben Simmons. So I think he'd get a lot more open looks and just better looks as a whole instead of the Puget threes and a lot more of his deeper bombs that he probably wouldn't do as much with Simmons. But like the thing we worry about with Simmons, if you moved him for Collins, because it would at least take John Collins, is that like there's no leadership already on this team outside of Collins. And you remove him and you put Ben Simmons and Trae Young as your two leaders in this locker room and leaders of this team. As a Hawks fan and as someone who watches a lot of Hawks games anyway, like that terrifies me. Like Draymond, like the comparisons, I get that, but it's like Draymond's still a leader. Draymond is still the engine that you can build around. And like, I don't think Ben Simmons is a leader and I don't think Trae is. And that's not even a slight at Trae. He's just not that guy. Like, he's not going to be the vocal rah-rah, get everything together, make sure they're all on the same page. That's not who he is, which is fine. You can still win that way, but it's just not him. He's more in that Harden mold. And I would be terrified of putting those two as your leadership figureheads together.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. And I think kind of what I was getting at in terms of I get them on the same page is Trae would have to give the ball up some to play with Simmons. I don't think he really wants to do that. So I think the other option, I really believe in Hunter, Okongwu, and Herter. I wouldn't necessarily mind just rolling with those guys around Trae and building for long term. We talked about earlier, I think Okongwu can be a top center. He's way more skilled than we think. He's a really good passer. He can play great defense. He's a good finisher. I wouldn't mind just like giving him the reins and telling him to go. Like, I think he's that good.
I mean, he's great, and I think Okongwu is going to be a star, and he's someone definitely to build around. But they're already pushed against the wall because of their spending last offseason, and they're in a tough spot. And also, it doesn't help that Bogey is clearly not right and has been bad all year. Like him not being there, Hunter still dealing with injury stuff, but like I don't know. I agree with you where it's like it's kind of been the season from hell and you kind of want to roll this out and see what happens, but I think there is so much pressure, it seems like, around that situation, and like because you made the Eastern Conference Finals that you can't afford to go back this much, but it's just it's complicated. Atlanta's in such a complicated position, and I think Schlink, his comments on 92.9 last week kind of emphasized that just like, I don't know. He's in a tough spot because Simmons, I understand, but I still don't think Daryl Morey's taken John Collins and a bunch of picks. Like, I don't know. Like, my biggest thing is just that, like, if I move Collins or I really shake up this roster and I get rid of a bunch of depth for a star or a tier two star next to Trae, that person better be a leader. It better be like someone who just is like, hey, this 28th defensive rating, that's over. We're not doing this anymore. This is done. We are We are busting our tail. We are getting back to what we need to do on that side of the floor, because it doesn't matter that we're number two in offense if we can't stop anybody. Like, I just need one of those players or that player to have that same kind of thinking. That's just where my head's at.
I guess I got a question for you as someone who watches the Hawks more than I do. Do you think the Collins thing is becoming untenable? I know he had the quotes recently about wanting a bigger role. I don't feel like that role is there for him. Can that keep working, or does he have to go eventually because he's just tired of being there?
What's funny about Collins is he's like the most likable player on the team, and I think he really does love being a Hawk and playing in Atlanta, but the offense is number two in the NBA. Offense has not been a problem. So when he talks about wanting a bigger role, it's like, what team's going to look at this and go, yeah, you're our number one or you're number two? Who in today's NBA is doing that? Who's backing up the Brinks truck to make or just hand you the keys to their offense and are like, let's see what happens? Like, are you looking for a Jeremy Grant type situation in Detroit where you're like, hey, I can do that? Well, guess what? You lost a lot of games, John Collins. Like, Jeremy Grant. Like, it didn't work. Like, and now they're moving on with Cade, and it's Cade's team now and all that. But like, I don't know. I think if I'm John Collins, I don't think he has a lot of leverage
the
here.
The answer is yes. I think the answer is yes, that first question.
Well,
people forget, like, it's fun to have the ball. It's fun to shoot.
Like, but it's not better for the team, at least offensively.
Well, then that's why I'm asking you the question. Because that was the thing with Cam, too, where it was like, Cam, we're not giving you a bigger role. That's just not happening. And he's like, well, I want a bigger role. And it's like, well, all right, then we're going to trade you if it's not happening here.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it does eventually become untenable, but the thing that cures it is if we're winning. Like, he was fine with everything last year.
That's true.
In the playoff run. Like, if we're winning a bunch of basketball games and you were winning 50-plus games year over year with Trey and Collins and company, then I think he gets over it. But when you're losing like this, then that kind of stuff props back up. So, I don't know. It depends. I would say yes if they don't figure it out, but if they do and make the playoffs and really figure it out on defense, then... maybe not. I don't know. We'll see. I hope so, but I am like the Jaylen Brown stuff is my ideal guy. Like, I would do whatever Boston needed if I'm Schlink to get Jaylen Brown in this building. Like, Jaylen and Trey is the dream scenario for me that I just don't think will ever be able to come to fruition, because I think those two would be perfect.
Atlanta, right?
He is. Yeah, he went to Wheeler.
Jaylen. Yeah.
It would be great. Dude's a leader. Get away, like, him next to Trey. I still like, that's the upside I'd be looking for. If I'm going to clean house on the depth and the picks, and we have so many picks that, like, I would just keep calling Brad Stevens. What's it going to take? Like, Jaylen Brown's the answer, and I just don't know if you can force Jaylen Brown to Atlanta.
Yeah, it'd be great, but yeah, it takes two to tango.
It does take two to tango. Frank Vogel might not be long for LA after winning a title. Has he done a bad coaching job in LA this season? How much of it would you put on Frank Vogel?
Very little. But mm-hmm. That really matters, obviously. You know? it's funny sometimes. You get people will cover and they'll say, oh, it's so unfair to Frank Vogel. Yeah, but Frank Vogel knew that.
You know? Right.
When you work, I always tell people, when you work for LeBron James, which is what he does, you're on a year-to-year contract.
Mm-hmm.
That can be cut anytime. Players, coaches, GMs, the whole franchise. Everyone's year to year but LeBron. And if LeBron is tired, then you're done. And I think Vogel's done a pretty good job, actually. I think playing LeBron to five is a great idea. I think that's pretty much saved their season. If they hadn't done that, if they hadn't benched DeAndre and Dwight, I think they'd be done right now. Playing LeBron to five has kept them afloat until AD can be healthy. I mean, I don't know what they expected Vogel to do. I think they expect him to fall on the sword. That's probably going to happen at some point.
What's the coolest part about LeBron at the five? What is that unlocked in his game this year?
Well, I just think it's given him more space. Like, LeBron is getting older, right? He's year 19. LeBron's always been a player who can dominate around the paint so much. He always does better with more space. And it's just hard for LeBron. I mean, it's hard to be able to play Dwight Howard at the five, DeAndre at the five, AD at the four, and Russ at point. I'm like, what's LeBron even going to do? There's nowhere to go on the floor. He has to pull up the jump shot. And that's not the strength of LeBron's game. It never has been. So you play him at the five, and now he just got all of the space in the world to do his thing. Like, when he cuts to the basket, there's no one in his way. He's wide open. So I think playing LeBron at the five, it just allows him had the same, more of an impact he had when he was younger, until he's playing in more space, essentially.
Interesting. Last thing I want to ask you about. De'Aaron Fox is the hardest guard who might be available ahead of the deadline or even this summer that I just can't forecast where he should go, because he's such an interesting player. The speed with which he plays, the questions with him this year next to Haliburton, and I'm more of a Haliburton guy than I am a De'Aaron Fox guy, but I still like both individually. I just don't think they're all that great of fits next to one another. But if he's available, and could he flip a contender? Like, when you look around the league of who could use somebody like De'Aaron Fox, is he the one where it's like people are talking about Beal or Ben Simmons or whoever, but you're like, oh, you know, if they added a veteran guard like Fox, this could change a lot and change the trajectory for this team a lot.
It's tough because I think actually the Haliburton-Fox thing worked okay last year. But once they added Davion Mitchell, the rookie from Baylor this year, there were just too many cooks in the kitchen. There are too many point guards. No one is really comfortable. And I think for De'Aaron right now, what's going on is De'Aaron has always been the best player on his team. Go back to Kentucky, go back to high school. Now it's 5 years in Sacramento. It's always been De'Aaron's team. If he went to a contender, well, it wouldn't be De'Aaron's team anymore. That'd require a massive adjustment process. I think this year you're seeing what that adjustment process looks like. Where, okay, Sacramento's telling De'Aaron, hey, we're not going to build around you anymore. We still like you. We think you can be part of our team, but everything don't go through you anymore. You've got to become more of a team player, more of a complementary option. And that's been very hard for him. He's having to rewire who he is as a player, change his game. And I think that's probably what he'll have to do eventually regardless. But he's still very young. I think he's 24. He's in year 5. It's going to take some time for him to change who he is as a player to play off someone else, because he's never had to do it before. So I don't think you really trade for De'Aaron Fox and think he can push me over the top. It kind of goes back to what I was saying about the Houston guards. Well, like, De'Aaron Fox is still figuring out who he is as a player and how he fits on a good team. He's always been the best player on a bad team. So especially at point guard, when you have the ball in your hands, as he does, when you trade for De'Aaron Fox, well, right now with this version of Fox to trade for him, it's now De'Aaron Fox's team, right? And I don't know that a contender's going to do that and say, okay, we wanted the ball to go to De'Aaron Fox. Like, so that's the disconnect. And I my suspicion is it'll take him a few years to change who he is as a player. I think it's still more of a long-term thing with him. I don't think you see him as a guy who's going to put the contender this season.
If you're Daryl Morey, though, do you consider it, if you can't get a tier one star, that you're like, okay, maybe Simmons for De'Aaron Fox and filler? Like, do you like the Embiid-Fox dynamic? Because that's so different.
I'd rather have Haliburton, I think, if I was going to trade Simmons.
Well, I think it's the money.
I think Haliburton or Harrison Barnes or something.
Yeah.
Like, you can make the money work. I'd rather do that. I don't know if you saw the report, though. There's a report out there that Morey wants to package Simmons for James Harden this summer.
Yeah, I saw that.
And that's my guess. I think Morey says, if I get Haliburton or Fox, I ain't winning the East. And if I'm not winning the East, why I'm making this trade? I think he's got Embiid to buy in, because this is being a transition year. So he's like, look, I'm trading Simmons this summer. I'm not trading him now. I really don't care. I think that's my guess of how it's going to go.
Which is terrible. Like, Embiid and buying that just really bums me out, because you can't have a transition year with Embiid, right? Like, the medical stuff, you can't afford that. You can't just be like, we can't yada yada one of the seasons of Joel Embiid's prime.
I think for Embiid, what Embiid is looking at is, this is his first season playing without Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what I think is going on here. I think Embiid is like, I don't want this guy around anymore. You know how, like, Simmons don't want to play with Embiid? I think it goes both ways. I think Embiid's like, I don't need this guy clogging up the floor, not letting me get to my spot, and his man's doubling off and he's staying on me. I don't want him around. Like, I want to do my thing. I want to grow as a player. So for Embiid is saying, just keep him away from the team. I don't even care. He even said that, right? He said that in an article, an interview with the Basics after that. He had a big line. I can't remember who it was. He said, we had everybody we need right now. I think Embiid looks at it like, I can be better without Ben Simmons here. So let's just not have him around. But that's my suspicion as to what's going on.
I don't know. You're playing with fire, burning an Embiid year. What's his PR? Like almost 30, I think it, as this recording. Like, I just, when it ends quickly with Embiid, and it's going to be devastating, and I'm not looking forward to that at all.
I will say, like, Embiid don't think that way.
Yeah.
It isn't like Embiid is thinking, man, my knees are shot. You better trade for someone right now because I have 1 year left.
But that's how he should be.
Looking at it. Yeah, but who's going to believe that about themselves, you know?
I guess. I would just pull him aside. Like, I would just be like, Joel, I love watching you play basketball. I love the idea of you going for a title, but like this, you cannot punt on any season in your prime right now. That is insane. You cannot do that. You cannot punt or just shut him down. If that's the case, then just don't let him play basketball anymore. I don't know. It's complicated. Jonathan, this has been great.
Go ahead. I will say with Embiid, and one thing to keep in mind, when you're talking about a player of Joel Embiid's caliber, he's ultimately the GM, because getting someone to play with Joel Embiid means Joel Embiid talking to that person. By that, I mean James Harden.
Mm.
Embiid has to sell Harden on coming to Philadelphia. Morey actually is not that involved in that, ultimately, right? The same way KD sold Harden coming to Brooklyn. Embiid, if it's not Harden, it's Dame, it's Bradley Beal, or whoever. Embiid has to sell that person on coming to play with him. That's what the game is at the highest level. So, like, whatever Morey wants to do, ultimately, it's Joel Embiid's team. It's Joel Embiid's decision. And either a guy wants to play with Joel Embiid or they don't. And that's what it, like, sometimes I think we give GMs too much. These guys are actually fairly limited. I mean, like, look what happened with Harden and Westbrook. Do you think Daryl Morey wanted to trade Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook? I really doubt it. Like, nothing about Russell Westbrook says this is Daryl Morey kind of player.
Yeah.
Did that matter? No, it did not matter.
Hmm. That's actually not even really talked about as like a loser, where it's like Daryl Morey never loses trades. It's like, well, no, I think he lost that one. I think he lost the Westbrook for Harden trade. I don't think that one was good.
I think they're looking very good right now. Oh, yeah. That's for sure.
I think we can chalk that one up as a loss. I think that I think we're there. Jonathan, what can we check out from you at theringer.com right now?
Yeah, so me and Kyle Mann, we just launched a podcast on the Ringer NBA show called Upside High, where we talk about players in their first few years in the NBA and in the upcoming draft class. So that comes out every Tuesday on the Ringer NBA show feed.
All right. Well, go do that. Keep up the great work. I'll be listening and continuing to read your work. Man, thank you so much for making the time. I greatly appreciate it. You stay safe, buddy. And I will talk to you very soon.
Cool. Awesome.
All right, that'll do it for today's edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast. Thank you again to the Ringer's Jonathan Charks for coming on today's show to talk all things NBA. Give him a follow at Jonathan Charks and keep up with the good folks at theringer.com today. All kinds of great content over there, sports, pop culture, all that good stuff. Also, if you like today's episode and you like listening to Jonathan Charks and I talk NBA on this very podcast, make sure and leave the show a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Tell a friend, coworker, family member, whoever about the podcast and why you like it and why they should listen. It'd be greatly appreciated. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at @Chase_Thomas. Like the Facebook page at facebook.com/ChaseThomasWriter. Go to ChaseThomasPodcast.com today. All my episodes right there, ChaseThomasPodcast.com. Sports Renaissance Man, that's me. I'm the Sports Renaissance Man. .substack.com. Type in your email every day. New stuff in your inbox, SportsRenaissanceMan.substack.com. And I think that's everything. Oh, yeah. Email me. For real. Email me, ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. Again, that is ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. All right. New episode tomorrow. Uncle Derek, how'd I do?
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.